Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
This is the Fixer Sciatica Podcast.
So it's been a while since we've had a recovery success story. And not to say that I haven't been able to, you know, be successful with the people that I work with, but this was a really exciting opportunity to work with someone who was active. And I felt like we reached a really cool aha moment in it. And so today we have Deborah Moore, who is just a superstar person and super strong and has a lot of really great accomplishments, both physically and professionally. And she was kind enough to share her journey with us. So Deb, it's so great to see you. And thank you for being a guest on the podcast.
Thank you, Ashley. It's a pleasure. I love working with you in all sorts of ways. So happy to come on here and chat to you.
Yeah. And you know, the pleasure is all mine. And so before we get into like your journey and like the pain that you went through that brought us working together this time around, for listeners who might have not come across you just yet, tell us a little bit more about yourself and kind of like a brief history of yourself and your history with athletics.
Okay, well, I'm 55, so that's the first thing to put out there. And so I've had a long career in athletics. A lot of people ask me, have you always been fit? And the answer is, in my adult life, yes. I also grew up in Australia, so if you're a kid in Australia, you're forced to do every sport. You know, you have to try basically everything. But I didn't really get into athletics until I was a rower at university. And then I was kind of doing the aerobics thing. I didn't really know what I wanted to do fitness-wise. And it was my then boyfriend, now husband, who heard about this sport called triathlon. So we started doing that. And long story short, we both ended up competing at the Ironman distance, which is an endurance distance. It's a, 2.4 miles swim, 112 mile bike, and a full marathon, 26 miles at the end. And we had some good success there. I went to the world championships, qualified for the world championships twice, went to do that in Kona, which is an amazing place to do any sort of event. And I kind of, after that, with the individual disciplines, swim, bike, run on my own, especially after having my first daughter, who's now almost 19, I was just kind of dabbling, and I was happy enough doing that. But when I hit my late 40s, I started to get really quite bored. I felt a bit directionless. And I also just didn't feel as good doing all that volume of endurance training. And looking back now, I'm thinking, well, maybe that was the first signs of perimenopause coming in, or aging, whichever one you want to look at. But it just didn't make my body feel as good. So my husband, again, heard about this thing called CrossFit. And I thought, hell no. I don't know anything about barbells. I don't know anything really about Olympic lifting. I'm certainly not a gymnast, so that's a no for me. But I went to a class at my local gym, and honestly, I was pretty hooked within 3 months. Not to say that it's not been challenging over the last 5 years, a lot to learn always, but that's kind of what I love about it. So yeah, I'm still CrossFitting. I compete a little bit at that, and I do a little bit of high rocks, which is the new kind of, the new thing. It's a hybrid race of running and strength stuff. So I think I prefer CrossFit, but, we'll see how it goes.
Wow, Deb, you are superhuman. And to hear all the experiences of what you've gone through, like, that is so cool. And I've had a very similar journey from a fitness standpoint. I was an endurance athlete growing up in high school, and in college I swam in university. And then when I retired from swimming, I needed to do something. So that's where I discovered CrossFit. And then that's actually where I began my physical therapy career, was in the CrossFit gym. And that was CrossFit itself was a thing that where Deb and I were able to really see eye to eye in regards to, I knew exactly what you were talking about when it comes to the lifts and everything. And
yeah,
when I would say, when your job is within a specific training modality, you have all of the opportunity that you can develop can be spent studying that specific modality. So let's talk about how kind of CrossFit and this weightlifting kind of brought us together for this most recent chain of events.
Yes. Well, this is the second time we've worked together. The first time I think we met on social media. And maybe you saw something I was doing in the gym, but I was really struggling with sciatica. I've always struggled, or throughout my Ironman racing career, I had a lot of issues on my left side with my piriformis. I always had like a painful or a tight piriformis. I was treated regularly for that specific thing. I've always had issues with lower back piriformis, the posterior chain. But I'd never had this sciatica issue. And to be quite honest, I was really scared. I mean, I've had a major, I dislocated my shoulder 2 years into CrossFit and came back from that. But I was really nervous about this one because it felt like it was something that was, it was chronic. It was a chronic thing. It was not an acute injury like a shoulder dislocation. And no matter what I did, I tried to treat myself. No matter what I did, it didn't seem to be improving. And I did go and see a hands-on therapist at this end where I live in Toronto, and nothing was really helping. And I think you reached out to give a suggestion. Oh, hey, well, this is interesting. This guy with a swim background and he knows CrossFit, because the thing that was really important to me was that I worked with somebody who understood what I needed to do. I don't want anyone telling me you cannot continue with this. That's a big red flag to me. If they say you can't do this right off the bat, then I'll say, okay, thank you very much, goodbye. But you said to me, okay, let's see what we can do here to adapt. And that is my favorite word of all time, is what can I do to adapt but keep going? So that's when we started working together. And it was a really... It wasn't the first time I started working with somebody online, but it was the first time that I was experiencing, you know, physio or rehab online as opposed to being coached. So obviously it's been a great experience. So that was the first time through, and it was a long haul the first time because this injury was quite significant. But it resolved itself, or you resolved it. So. I came back from that, but I think I had a flare up, which is fairly common with sciatica as I understand it. And I think it was because I got lazy again, or I reverted to what I was doing before. I'd forgotten some of the things, or I hadn't ingrained what you had told me previously about my form fully. And so I had this flare up, which again, thankfully, has resolved. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. It was an honor. And yes, you're absolutely right. Flare-ups will happen. And I'll start off with when you said how much you love the word adapt. And it is really important to be able to adapt our life or how we do things to get the job done. And I think I've been living that type of mantra my entire athletic career because I was an endurance swimmer. You did all your Ironman triathlons. And what I think people can get from endurance training is, regardless of how terrible you feel, you got to finish the race, right? And so you can either finish the race in terrible pain, or you can say, what can I do to make it hurt less? And that was actually, it was interesting because I don't know if you ever experienced this, but when people say like, oh, you're an endurance athlete, you must have been so tough. I'm probably one of the least tough people ever. I felt every ounce of pain in every single one of my trainings, every single one of my races. And so I acknowledged the pain, and I wasn't someone who just said, let me just turn my brain off and go into the pain. And that was actually one of the first, I think the first couple of years of the CrossFit Open, when they were doing YouTube strategies or like this workout, it was like burpees and rowing, just turn your brain off and go. And I said, I can't do that. That's actually the exact opposite of what I need to do. So what I meant to say was, how can I get all this work done with less pain, right? And so it tapped into this efficiency standpoint. And I think, and I've noticed this, especially in my practice, that it's evolved. Rather than saying you're doing things wrong, it's saying, hey, this is not the most efficient way to do things. Let's clean it up a little bit, right? And so what was really interesting throughout your journey, like our journey as working together, I noticed one, you were actually pretty flexible. You felt some of those end range tightness and stiffness. What I found is that oftentimes when you are flexible and you're experiencing those end range tightness, stiff areas, it's really more of a protective mechanism telling us, hey, there's a lot of motion here and not enough motion going on in a different part of your body. And we identified that we just had to get those hips moving a little bit more. And so it was really great to be able to like really address a lot of the form standpoints. And our first introduction, Deb, I found you on Instagram and I reached out to you, but then I also interviewed you for the podcast about just like aging, right? And I think it's really important because a lot of people can attribute their aches and pains to getting old, which, you know, aging does have an important part, like part of in regards to how we feel. I like to say, because a lot of people think as they get older that their car just gets beaten up more and it like doesn't run as well as it used to. I came up with this other analogy. What I found to be much more beneficial was that it's not that your car is getting beat up, is that your car is getting much more precious. You're becoming a much more high-end vintage car where you definitely do not want to scuff the sidewalk or drive over the divider. Like, you have a very precious thing. So if you do happen to bump into the curb, you're going to feel it because it's a precious car and it's going to be a little bit more to repair it as well. So those are the things. Right. But anyway, as we get older, we definitely get much more precious. Our bodies don't necessarily break down and we just got to drive a little bit more responsibly and a little bit more efficiently. You know, we're not going to be taking our cars, you know, 80 miles an hour around a corner because we have a lovely vintage vehicle that we're managing.
Yeah, I think that's important for people to realize. And, you know, if anybody here is on Instagram and follows me, I talk a lot about this mindset of aging. A lot of people predict what might happen and they act on the prediction of what they think aging will do to them, as opposed to experiencing the thing and adapting to it or just going with it, which, you know, this what you just said about, you know, mobility and end range mobility or flexibility. I actually went through a moment myself where I thought, well, is this now the start of my aging process? Or is this where the start of the decline is in my mobility? Because that's what you're told, right? Is that you become less mobile when you get older. And in fact, what I'm finding now, still a little bit of tightness in some areas, some days, but I am back to squatting the same depth that, say, in a snatch that I was when I first started CrossFit. Granted, I was 50 when I started CrossFit, but, you know, I still have the same mobility. I can still, you know, get when I do the, what is that thing called where you put your legs up against the wall in a pancake, the wall pancake?
Squat therapy.
Yeah.
Squat therapy.
I can still do that really well with my legs almost in a split. And I'm 55 and I realized I came to that moment of, well, I didn't need, you know, it wasn't that I was aging. I actually just needed help. I needed somebody to work with me to get me back to that or get me back to my optimal mobility. And I think that's really important for people as they age to realize it's, you know, but stop predicting doom for yourself and accepting this narrative that you're going to get less mobile or you're going to get more injured when you're older. Just do what you want to do and see what happens and adapt. You know, there's the word again.
100% being able to, see what you can do. I think when you have that attitude, it allows you to look at life from a point of curiosity and excitement versus the doom and gloom, which doesn't serve any of us. And I really appreciate you sharing that with us. Let's talk about here you are squatting at the depths that you were 5 years ago, right? And you were dealing with some of these like long-term chronic issues. And then all of a sudden, here you are squatting at the depth that you are right now. So from a squat perspective, what were the biggest aha moments or changes that you felt had the biggest impact on being able to squat without pain or feeling a lot better than where you were?
Right. Well, the first thing was you were very forceful with me in, sorry, that's my dog. You were very forceful with me in modifying with things like, you know, if I was doing cleans to clean off blocks and not going all the way down to the floor and avoiding, you know, deadlifts and the things that aggravated the sciatica while it was still healing or as while it had still been flaring. So that was the first thing is having someone to be accountable to keep you sensible because I am a person who's very driven. And I have many times in the past driven myself beyond what was sensible. So it's very good to have that accountability. I need the accountability. I think many people do. So that's the first thing to say. I think the other things that were a bit of an eye-opener were just how much a little tweak in form, what a big difference that can make. So as an example, one of the things that you saw in me, so having the visual feedback was really great, was that I needed to lean forward slightly more, say on my running or on my squats. But you very clearly kind of clarified that by saying it's not so much a full torso lean when you're squatting. It's you've got to kind of tuck those ribs a little. And that makes, that made such a huge difference. That was a game changer for me when it came to A, resolving the sciatica, and B, just improving my squat depth overall. And I don't know if it's because, you know, I have, you know, I've read about the femur length affecting the way that you squat, and I never realized that before. Or that's just the way I need to squat, but it made the biggest difference to all of my lifts, every single one of my lifts. That and the knee, pushing knees out.
Yeah, knees out, yeah.
Which I knew I had to do. Like, I've watched enough YouTube videos and read enough stuff in CrossFit and Olympic lifting that I know I have to push those knees out. But until somebody watches your video and says, you're not doing it, you really need to focus on that. You don't necessarily get it right.
Yeah, for sure. I think when I work with folks, I think it's important to make sure that the two of us, like when we're working together, it's a team effort, right? It's not just me like throwing stuff at you, right? It's not do it like you're doing everything I say, because it is important for us to try something and then see how it feels and see if there's like actual real-time feedback. And it is really important to ensure that we have the real-time feedback and also truly the details. I think one of the challenges, especially in say like the traditional healthcare model, it's like, okay, hey, like, can I do X, Y, and Z? They're like, oh, well, listen to your body. Well, I think what's really interesting is that one, the humans, one of the reasons why we're able to push innovation and even physical performance is the fact that we actually do a very good job of not listening to our body. And so to be told to listen to our body is kind of like an empty platitude, because of the fact that we know, especially when we're trying to get stronger, when we're in a fun, gamified environment. I'm not going to say competitive environment, but that also is the case. But when you're in a gamified environment, you want to win. And as much as people say it's not really a competition in CrossFit, you do have that opportunity to say, oh, I want to push myself a little bit more. So our adrenaline overrides it, our prefrontal cortex overrides all of those things that our body is actually sending us. So instead of saying, just listen to your body, because yeah, we're most likely going to ignore it, we have to be able to create a little bit more focus and details, which is what I appreciated about the way that we worked was you would send me your workouts and I would say, okay, with your workout for this day, you're going to focus on X, Y, and Z. For a while, we stopped doing toes to bar because I noticed that your hip flexors were actually the ones that were getting engaged. And when your hip flexors are super engaged and tight, it pulls you into that arch. It's really hard to tuck those ribs, and then kind of cascades down into all of that. So it's being able to say, hey, I know you have this coming up. Let me give you a specific plan to follow through versus, Deb, listen to your body. I mean, the thing is that you and your daughter are not going to, you know, didn't make it to the High Rocks World qualifiers for listening to your body when things got really hard. Things got really hard and you pushed through it, and here you are going at the highest level of the High Rocks event, right? And so you have that. And then, yeah, form. A form is a lot, and you know, people talk about it a lot. And I think one of the challenges is that, especially when you're watching on YouTube and you're like trying to communicate to a large group of people, is that when you're creating content, you have to create content that kind of covers everything all at once, and it's hard to kind of address those nuances, right? And so those nuances are those little changes, the little tweak, pulling your ribcage down, pushing those knees out. And I think one of the biggest things was actually letting your torso down a little bit as well. And I see that a lot in people when they're deadlifting, trying to keep the chest up. And this specific episode of working with you, we were, after a couple of weeks, I realized that it all, like the most recent flare was because you were focusing a little bit more on Olympic weightlifting. Right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I decided that I just needed a different focus for a while, and I love it. I love it. But obviously Olympic lifting is very challenging, and I'm technically still quite a newbie. I mean, after 5 years, I mean, I think a lot of people would argue that CrossFitters are never the best at Olympic lifting. They're not going to be like, you know, the folks you see on the platform. So, and we do kind of bastardize the techniques quite a bit when you see CrossFitters doing Olympic lifting in the workouts. It wouldn't pass muster on the platform. So I did want to focus on it though, because I'm of the opinion that you always need to keep learning, right? You need to try and find a way to improve at something, and everybody needs a bit of a change up. So I did start doing a 3 days a week Olympic lifting program through a CrossFit organization, or the CrossFit box. And it's great, but it's a lot of repetitive stuff in the, you know, doing the same movements. And I think that the fact that I was basically repetitively doing stuff wrong was what ended up with me having the flare up again. I wasn't even doing that much running, which was the thing that used to have me, I think, a little strained in that area. It was reinforcing bad technique. So yeah, it was really frustrating, because I had spent a long time with you resolving the first flare up. And then it happened again, and I was like, oh God, don't tell me it's going to take, you know, months and months and months again. And hey, presto, it kind of fixed it. Well, it was fixed fairly quickly.
Here we are. Whenever someone comes to me and with a flare up, anytime someone is discharged and completed a program with me, I often say, hey, listen, what we've done together, when you have a flare-up, should work. And what's interesting is that when I do get back together with, say, with some repeat people, I have to ask myself, well, did they do what we talked about in the previous interactions that we've had? And I'm not here to waste anyone's time. And so knowing that we were also on a time crunch, I was able to kind of funnel through and say, okay, well, the previous strategies that we did didn't really quite work. What's the biggest difference between the flare-up when we first met versus the flare-up now? And I will say that it's taken a lot of years for me to get to this point where I was able to say, because we could have wasted 4 or 5 weeks just trying to do the same thing over and over again. But with my season, I was like, okay, that's a waste of time. We don't need to do that. So we looked at what is different. Oh, you're doing a lot more Olympic weightlifting. And so CrossFit did a great job of introducing people to Olympic weightlifting, doing Olympic lifts, and Metcon is obviously an entirely different discussion.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Discussion, but I'll tell you what, I've done clean and jerks for time. I've done snatches for time. Do I do it now? No, just because my training priorities are a little different, but there is a place for it, especially if that's what you want to be able to train, which then brings up when we talked about, okay, oh, turns out that is most likely Olympic lifting. And I was seeing some of your lifts, and your lifts actually weren't bad. We just needed to clean that up a little bit. It wasn't terrible. And I go back because I got in a couple of weightlifting certifications myself, and I said, okay, well, what is missing? And then we went in there and I was watching some of your videos, and it turned out all the lifts were pulling from the floor, that's where the lift should be starting. But what separates a deadlift versus a clean and jerk or a snatch is what is called the second pull, the explosive hip extension that occurs when the bar is at the level of your hip. And what I find most CrossFitters are deficient in is actually that hip extension. And it's often not because it was taught poorly, it was just that you didn't really have much of an opportunity to practice specifically on that lift. And so I said, how can we get the biggest bang for our buck? Right. And you were really kind enough to be patient with me and being down to try it, because I remember saying, how about we start lifting from the block? Let's have it here. I know it's going to feel awkward, but I think we only did it for about 2 to 4 weeks. And then in that time, you started to get more explosive. Your pain was really starting to go down as well. And that was really what spoke to me, saying, oh, I think it really is more of a form issue than weakness. Because Deb, you're strong. I've seen you lift forgive me because I don't remember, but you were lifting some pretty good weights. So listen to that. Let's say if you are lifting weights more than 5 or 10 pounds and you're walking around and you're not folded over like a noodle, you're actually a pretty strong human being. And the strengthening work is great from an isolation standpoint. I think it's good from a prevention standpoint, but oftentimes we just need to make those tweaks. Anyway, I just had to say, Deb, you're already strong as it is, and we just need to clean it up a little bit. And so what were your initial thoughts when I said, Deb, let's lift from the block. I'm only going to have you lift from this specific range of motion for the next couple weeks.
This episode is brought to you by the Patient Advocate Program. Are you tired of not having support between your rehab sessions? Introducing the Patient Advocate Program, and we're focused on your recovery, and we're offering you 24/7 access to a doctorate of physical therapy. Stop waiting in line to be seen and stop spending hours doing long exercise programs. Imagine being able to get all of your care delivered straight to your phone. Best of all, it's affordable. We believe everyone deserves top-notch relief without breaking the bank. So why wait? Take control of your health today and visit ptpatientadvocate.com and book your free call with our experts.
You know, I'm always, when I choose to work with someone, I've obviously got an, I've got a goal in mind. I want to get better. So I'm always initially receptive to people's suggestions, especially if it's an expert and they say, this is what I want you to do. I'm like, okay. I have to admit, after a couple of weeks, I was thinking, okay, I really would like to see what it's like to lift from the floor. Has this transferred? I understood what you were trying to have me do. And I thought, well, surely I've achieved this by now. You know, it's been a couple of weeks. And also it felt like it's always hard to take a step backwards, or what you see as a step backwards, when you're a competitive person. I wanted to get back to, okay, I want to do like find my one rep max again and all this. And it's hard to do that when you're lifting from blocks and you're trying to focus on technical stuff. I think having been an athlete in a fairly tough discipline like Ironman, and a parent, you know, I have 3 children. What, you know, going through some of the really tough things before teaches you a lot of patience. And I think the experience, having the experience of going through hard things and having to be patient, like a major injury, like dislocating my shoulder, like having my first sciatica thing, which took months, it just teaches you to have a bit of faith in the process, that if you stick with this, you will get there. As no matter what you think, if it, you know, it's going so slowly, in fact, you feel like you're taking steps backwards. Going through these hard things previously had taught me that if I just stick with this and I listen to you and I just stick with it, I will improve. And conversely, if I start messing around and ignoring advice that is being given to me by people who know what they're saying, doing, I will take major steps backwards, or I will injure myself even worse. I've done that through experience too. So I think that's the key thing is just being 55 and having gone through a lot of these things taught me about patience.
Yeah, patience is huge. On the other end, I would be so intrigued to learn a little bit more about, you know, it is important for us to kind of stick through things. It's really hard to say, you know, try something once and then, like, especially something as complicated as weightlifting, to like try something once and say either I'm like good at it or not. Like, the reality is that we're never going to be able to master a skill in the first time we try it. I mean, I have as of this recording, I have an 8-month-old daughter, and she's just starting to walk and starting to stand up. But for her, like, she had to fall multiple times and she just never gave up, right? Like, if we all gave up at that point, we'd all just be sloths. But I think it is important on the other end of being able to say, well, this isn't working, so I need to change something up. So with your experience, like working with multiple people, outside of the fact that where they just said, stop doing what you're doing, what were some of the criteria for you to say, all right, I need to have a different approach because this isn't quite working? Like, for you, was it a certain time stamp, or was it a certain feeling, or was it the results that you're going to lack of results? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think it was mostly, you know, I don't think that there's very much that I've completely given up and abandoned. I think it's more a case of when I realized I was getting re-injured in the exact same way multiple times, that's when I had to stop and say, okay, whatever it is that I'm doing is not working. It's something has to change. So, you know, the piriformis thing when I was doing Ironman, that was crippling sometimes. It wasn't as bad as the sciatica. It's a different type of pain, but it showed me there's something going on. Either it's my run technique or it's my position on my aero position on the bike, which was likely what it was. Or, it, you know, when it comes to nutrition, even I was having, you know, horrible workouts as post Ironman racing, this is, but I would be having months where I just couldn't finish my workouts. I felt completely drained, and whatever I'm doing isn't working. So I had to abandon my previous strategy, which was, and a lot of women out there will understand this, how little can I get away with eating and still do this running, swimming, biking thing, because I want to be lean, right? I want to be my leanest self and all that. And I realized then I have to get rid of that way of living and actually think like an athlete, think like an Olympic athlete would. I got to fuel my body properly. So yeah, I don't think I've ever actually fully abandoned anything. I've just adapted hugely. And I've abandoned previous strategies that weren't serving me.
Well said. Yeah, it's important, again, to have patience, but then also to really look back on how it's serving you. And I think you brought up a really good point from a repetitive, it would just occur over and over again. And you said it, what that told us or told you was that we needed to change something, right? We needed to change a strategy. And I think it's really important, especially when people are going through a pain relief journey, is the fact that, well, one, I'm just going to say, you meet 10 physical therapists, you meet 10 physios, you're going to get 10 different treatment approaches on that. And so that list will continue to go on because, yes, there is a formalized education. The formalized education was actually really more so for two things. Number one, the most important, because that's what grants us our license, is number one, you don't kill or hurt your patients. That's number one. But then really, like, the world is kind of your oyster after that. But really what school should be teaching us or has is teaching us to be what is called critical or clinical decision makers. What's the best strategy that I can pursue based on the information that I have? And if you are in need of more information, you search for that information, or if you have enough information, you then reach a decision, but then you consistently evaluate the effectiveness. And so for your listeners out there who've been going through a pain relief journey and trying to figure out, well, how do I approach a different strategy or should I be continuing on? My general rule of thumb is that when you're in an active state of pain, your focus is to do everything you can to actually reduce your pain. And what that also means is look at the grand scheme of things. Maybe your pain is still a 7 out of 10 on a daily basis, but now you're able to actually go for a bike ride with your family or being able to see like what you can do now. If you are able to experience a change with the strategies that you're going through, fantastic. It might be an opportunity to be a little bit more patient and go through. But if you've been at a strategy for a long period of time and you truly experienced no changes whatsoever, it's probably an opportunity for us to investigate a different strategy and not necessarily give up or pursue a different strategy. So I really appreciate that. Yeah. And so with that being the case, right, we pushed through a lot of plateaus. For the listeners out there, there are some folks who are on the tail end of recovery and they're getting really excited to get back into lifting, getting back into being physically active. This is what I like to call, I don't like calling it, but this is what I usually call it, is the danger zone. The danger zone is when you're actually feeling very, very good, but your body or your nervous system is not quite ready because you didn't necessarily give yourself enough time to practice, not necessarily enough time for the tissues to heal. Because when you're dealing with pain for a long period of time, anything outside of 12 weeks, the tissues that need to be healed are healed. So if you're beyond the 12-week mark and you're starting to feel a little bit better, your tissues are healed, but it's really more so you haven't gotten enough practice to do things correctly. So when we're in the danger zone, getting back into things, Deb, for the folks that, you know, are looking to get back into working out, getting back into lifting, what are some of the biggest tips or steps that you recommend that people follow?
Well, the first thing is I still return to the technical stuff that you had me do. Yesterday? Yeah, I was doing clean and jerks, and I actually did half my sets off the blocks. Not because I felt any pain or tightness, just because I had 12 sets of singles to do. And I figured, well, why not? Well, you know, it's not going to make a difference to my clean and jerks if I do 6 of them off the blocks. And it might actually help the other six because it's going to reinforce the technical stuff. So for me, the tip number one would be, you know, form above everything. Form always comes first, and not to be a hero, not to let your ego get in the way, even if this workout says find your one rep max today, is, you know, put the form first, and I will always return to that. You know, I'd rather take the weight down a little bit and execute it with perfect form, because I know that that's going to reduce my risk for re-injury. The second tip is not to completely abandon the other aspects of self-care that you might have been focused on when you were in recovery. A lot of people, when they're recovering from something, they really, okay, I'm going to, you know, make sure I do get enough sleep because I know that's really important for injury. I'm going to, you know, fuel my body with lots of great micronutrients and hydrate properly. And then when everything's all fixed, everyone kind of goes, you know, like gung ho, and they kind of let all that slip. And that those are fundamental principles of just wellness and health overall. So definitely, you know, just kind of stick with that. That's a maintenance thing that you have to do for the rest of your life. And the third thing is to always keep that adaptability mindset. Just because you're well again now doesn't mean that you're not going to have challenges. And it doesn't, you know, it's not necessarily an injury challenge, but maybe, you know, your kid is not sleeping for a couple of weeks in a row. They're going through some other developmental leap. And so you're not sleeping. And, you know, you have to be a bit adaptable, because that's where the risk of re-injury happens, is when you have a slight little speed bump and you don't adapt a little bit or stay mindful of the impact that that speed bump can have on you. You know, just to constantly be in an adaptive, curious mindset so that you can continue to dodge the speed bumps as they present themselves, because they always will. There will always be something. Always.
Yes, there will always be something. And we just gotta adapt to it. I am going to share a very interesting take on form and form slippage. I don't think I've ever told you this, but there's only one instance that I actually will say form slippage is acceptable, and it is during competition itself. Really, ultimately, when you are in competition, you are falling back on your training. So what that means is the fact that you should be practicing. It's not practice makes perfect, it's you got to practice perfectly. And so ultimately, when you are training and practicing, consider everything that we do, especially like if you're going to a CrossFit class or if you're lifting, if you're not actually in a lifting competition or an exercise competition, everything that you're doing is technically training. And so that means that you're not going 100%. That means you're doing everything correctly. It is only the very few times when you are competing. And oftentimes when I'll tell people, when they're saying like, oh man, I got hurt during a race, I got hurt during like an actual competition, I like to say, I'll ask, well, did you win the competition? And so that just makes it so that it's letting form slip is a little less scary, but we have that allowance. And I think that's really important, because I know, even though for me, when I was swimming, I definitely know that as I started to get tired, obviously in my head, I was like, well, how can I finish this race with less pain? But I know that especially the last 25 of my race, if I'm neck and neck with that person, I am literally going to do everything I can and put every ounce of my soul in that, right? And the same thing happened in the CrossFit Open as well. But I just knew, like, especially when I got into the CrossFit, I was a little bit older and as a PT. And also, I'm not like the strongest from a CrossFit standpoint. So I just knew that if I just kept it together a little bit, I can just finish. But yeah, that's where like one of the very few times where I'll say I'll let form slide. But especially from a training standpoint, you want to keep things together, because that is going to translate on over to life. And if you have no desire competing, that's totally fine. If you have no desire competing, then you don't ever have to put yourself in a position where you let the form slip. The second instance is when it's like an emergency setting, right? Ideally, we want to lift with a nice flat back, but I know picking up my daughter off of the ground or even in her crib, I'm going to be slightly rounded. And just understanding that I'm going to be lifting my child up, who's now 18 pounds, slightly rounded, I have to make sure that throughout the rest of my day, I'm not going to lift things slightly rounded either.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree. I think, you know, I've not been in, I don't do a lot of competitions. It's just hard with, you know, still having a couple of kids still at home, but that's definitely where you just you leave everything out there on the floor. And I look at some of my videos from the Open or from Bros and Does, which is a big competition here in Toronto. The dumbbell snatches, it's awful. Like the back arching and you're trying to muscle this thing up above your head and it's, you know, it's kind of wobbling up there. But I think you're absolutely right. It's not something that you should see 99% of the time. And that's what I go into every workout with, is I'm not here to win this workout in the traditional sense. You know, that is not the goal of a workout. The goal of the workout is to A, get some sort of strengthening or conditioning, and B, is to improve technically. And I actually, people ask me, you know, do you miss competing a lot? Because I competed a lot as a triathlete. And I say, no, you know what? If I never competed again, I actually wouldn't be unhappy, because I do this in the drive to be better for me, like for to get better, to get technically better at the lifting, to get stronger, you know, for the bone health, the mental health, you know, to age a little more functionally. And that's what I do it for. I'm not there to always get PRs. That's not my, it's nice to get a PR, and I'm still getting recent PRs. I'm not lifetime PRs, but that's what I'm here for. I'm here to learn and to just get better. So I think hopefully that'll keep me safe from doing something really stupid. But I think it's important for people to really separate those two things.
Absolutely. And so, you know, here we are, you know, there are some people who are listening to this podcast who are starting to feel a little bit better. And they're like, okay, I think I'm ready to go on to the next step. And so for the listeners out there who want to hear and learn more about the work that you do and possibly work with you, tell us a little bit more about your platform and what you do for folks and how people can get in touch with you.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Of course. Well, I'm mostly on Instagram, so people can find me on Instagram at stronger with just the R on the end, _ movement. Currently, I have been doing a lot of one-on-one coaching. So much like yourself, working with people to understand what their challenges are, mostly in the nutrition area. That's what I have been doing for the past few years. And it's primarily women in my phase of life. So midlife 40 plus, where the challenges of hormonal shifts do make it a little more interesting and a little more difficult to manage body composition, energy levels. I am actually switching, or not switching, I guess growing, expanding, and I'm going to start providing strength programming and addressing all the pillars that I talked about earlier, actually, all the pillars of health and wellness, which is, you know, the sleep and the daily movement, nutrition, mindset, a lot of mindset work, which I think is really actually crucial, not just for athletes, but or people who see themselves as athletes, but people who are just getting started on their fitness and strength journey, is helping people with mindset stuff. And I'm building programs that I'm going to be launching on an app actually later this summer. So it's pretty busy, and that's going to be the main way that people can connect with me, is through either I'm going to have one-time programs or a subscription-based thing. Of course, people can always message me. I do get a lot of DMs every day, and I do try and respond to every single one of them. You can also have a look at my website and email me through that too.
Listeners, I'm going to go ahead and put Deborah's information in the show notes. So if you are looking to get the next step from injury recovery to just feeling your best self, Deborah is a great person to reach out to. So definitely highly recommend you get in touch with her and work with her if you have the opportunity. Deborah, it's so great seeing you. And thank you so much for your patience with me and willingness to share your story. It's been so great. And I'm looking forward to just what the future holds for you.
I have to say, I think I should be the one thanking you for your patience. I'm pretty good at following instructions, but I can be a little stubborn sometimes. I know that I messaged you a couple of times saying, can I start doing Toes to Bar now? So thank you for your patience, and thank you for bringing me back to my full function again, and just being so, I think, insightful. The thing I love the most about working with you is that you can actually look at videos and you can see almost immediately what is going on. But I also love the fact that you are an athlete yourself, so you know where people like me are coming from. You know, you're not somebody who say, okay, well, you got to stop doing that and just do these rehab exercises. It's really gratifying as an athlete to be able to work with somebody like you who understands that.
Yeah. Well, pleasure's all mine. I love everything I do. And it's, you know, people like you who make this job awesome. This is the reason why I do it. So thank you again, Deborah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you got some help from today's podcast. And for more info, check us out at ifixyoursciatica.com. Have a fantastic and pain-free day.
No patient-therapist relationship is formed by listening to this podcast. We are not providing medical advice, and all information should be confirmed by a medical provider.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started today for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.